Good morning. Thank you for participating in our worship this morning as you have, and a special thanks to all who led already this morning. I want to give a very special thanks to our brother Larry for the absolutely wonderful prayer that encompassed so much and so many of the people that we love with all of our heart, all the members of our church family. And one of those that was mentioned in the prayer, our brother Pat Ashley, has asked that we begin this morning by offering a very special thank you to the congregation for all the calls and the cards and the visits, every act of kindness in the passing of his mother. As I said to Donna yesterday, we are never ready to give up our moms, our dads, regardless of the condition that they may be. And it's a very special time when we go through that particular passage and experience in life. And we express our love and sympathy to everyone in that situation and so many others that Larry has mentioned. Thank you, Larry, for beginning so well. He also mentioned about a fantastic day that we had yesterday, the Ladies' Day. I appreciate so much the theme that was addressed by Jane Maynard of Mountain Home, Arkansas, An Essential Peace. I was already thinking along that line about today's lesson, not knowing really what she was going to cover, other than to always recognize and be impressed with the essential part that our ladies play in the work of the congregation. Our lesson today is not just for you, it is for all of us, but based upon that emphasis as well as the emphasis in this passage that is often overlooked, I want you to think about finding your fit in Henderson. We happen to be a part of a congregation, of a church family that has a tremendous history, a tremendous legacy of faith, of faithfulness, and of service. I'm afraid sometimes that all of that goes far beyond what many of us recognize. Probably no one of us is aware, perhaps outside our elders and our deacons, our brother Larry Oldham and Bill, and perhaps others that work so closely, Joy and Charlene in the office, know just exactly all of the things that are going on within the life of the congregation in terms of good works. But one reason why I wanted to address this theme today was in Bill Wade's most recent bulletin article. He started off by saying, we have 337 families within the membership of the Henderson congregation. I don't know if that is an all-time high or not, but he also made the point, and that we are adding to that number. How wonderful is that? And there are some in our congregation who continue to be encouraged to be added to our family because we love you. But it's not only that, we need you. Every single one, from the eldest to the youngest, is an essential piece. The sad thing is that some, for whatever reason, do not seem to find their fit, or maybe think that there's not a special fit for them to fulfill in the life of the church. This passage in Romans 12 is overshadowed in terms of popularity and fame by the first two verses that through the years I have noticed our college students especially love, about being not conformed to the world but being transformed by the renewing of your mind and presenting your body as a living sacrifice to the Lord. Very familiar. You skip down to verse 9 about, let love be without hypocrisy, abhor that which is evil, and cleave to that which is good. And it goes all the way through verse 21, be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. Very familiar. Those 15 qualities or so that Paul mentions between 9 and 21 are very familiar. Here are four verses that are often overlooked, or maybe five verses. I want us to think about finding our fit along three principles that I want to mention very quickly. And then Paul mentions most of his time in the fourth principle. So finding your fit, let's begin first of all. That's going to happen when we take a good analysis of ourselves and we know what it is that we can do. When in verse 3, Paul makes the statement that no one should think more highly of themselves than they ought to think, it's also the opposite that is true. No one should think less of themselves than they ought to think. Very early in life, we become aware of what it is that we have special abilities to do. And everyone has those. There are some things that we choose to do for a life work based upon desires that we have or interests that we have or maybe encouragements that we have had from other people to do certain things, especially in the church. There have been young men who've been invited to lead singing who never thought about leading singing before, to lead prayer, to serve at the table. Youth group involved in all kinds of mission activities and service projects and opportunities like that. They may never have thought about that before. But Paul says, while we should not think more of ourselves than we ought to think, we ought not to think less of ourselves. We need to know what it is that we can do for the Lord. Very quickly, we need to know also, need to be able to accept what we can do. In other words, as we take stock of our abilities and our opportunities, things that we're invited to do, there are sometimes limitations on what we can do because of ability or because of opportunity or because of what the Bible teaches. I'm thinking about this group, for instance, in terms of our ladies, about their limitations in public worship, different role that God has given those who lead public worship, who serve as elders, who serve as deacons. But as Sister Jane mentioned yesterday, the whole world is open to what our ladies do in the church and must do in order for the church to survive, in order for the church to grow. You are evangelistic. You provide most of the education program in terms of leadership. You also are filled with benevolent activities, doing service things that so many do not know about behind the scenes that if you did not do them, they would not get done. So while there are some limitations, we accept that, but we also accept what it is that we can do. And so Paul goes on to say, God's given you a gift. We have different gifts in the body. We have different gifts in the congregation. Just like the body has different parts that fulfill every function that God has given the body, we have different roles that we play, and every one of them is important. Yes, there will be some who will be asked to serve publicly. Most of us are going to be asked to serve more in a private way. The Lord's work is done more outside the church building than it is inside the church building. As critical and valuable as worship is our rallying cry to then go out into the world and make all the difference in the world that we have been encouraged to be and to do and to make in our worship assemblies, all of which is to the honor and glory of our Father who is in heaven. And so as we think about using the gifts that we have, we take stock of maybe whatever natural talent or ability as well as those skills in which we have been trained. But then Paul applies all of that by then making application. He says, not only do you have a gift, and of course in the first century world, this would have included those who had been given spiritual gifts where they were able to do miraculous things. To us, he's in the 21st century applying to natural gifts. And so he talks about if your gift is prophecy, that obviously would have been a spiritual gift. It would have to do with public proclamation. Those who were prophets in the first century church did not have to worry about from where the message was coming when they stood to speak. The Lord opened their mouths and filled their hearts with a message that was directly from Him. And the word prophet has the idea of not only foretelling future things, but basically telling forth whatever God has revealed to you to say. Preaching, of course, today includes the prophetic element, but only through the Word, of course, not miraculously. And so this would be likened to public proclamation, but it can also include private proclamation. Paul summarized his work in many ways with the church in Ephesus in Acts 20 and verse 20, and what we've come to know as 2020 vision of personal evangelism, as saying, I taught you publicly, and I also taught you house to house. There are some that are more effective in teaching publicly. There are some that are super effective in teaching privately. When I think about the teaching that goes on inside the church building as well as outside the church building, I think of moms and dads every day, every night, conducting Christian schools in your homes. You don't relieve the spiritual teaching of your children to those who are filling Sunday school classes or leading youth groups or in public worship. That's going on 24/7, even as Moses directed us in Deuteronomy 6. So as we think about the next one, I love this because public proclamation is something, obviously, that is very public, but ministry, in some translations, the word service is used. If service is your calling, if you please, then serve. I think about the many roles. We have 47 deacons now that are serving the congregation, and deacons are not added to the congregation unless there is a specific role for them that the elders have seen within these men and their families that perhaps they're already doing to some degree, but now will do to an even greater degree. Think about that. 47 different areas at least. And so, if your calling is that area, then he says, do it. Recognize the opportunity God has given you and serve. The one who teaches in his teaching. Not only does this refer to classroom teaching, it refers to one-on-one teaching. We never know when we'll have teaching moments. That can happen at work. That can happen in recreation. That can happen in a visit to the nursing home. That can happen to a funeral chapel. That can happen in hospital visits. That can happen in all kinds of settings. It can happen around family tables. It can also happen in family devotionals and the closing of each day in a very special way. Teaching moments. But those of you who teach, and we're all called to do so in one way or the other, we are to be teachers. He says, the one who exhorts in his exhortation. The word exhort is stronger than the word encourage, which is one of our most powerful words. If someone encourages you, what they have done, they've given you a courage transfusion, whether you realize you needed one or not. The word encourage comes from the prefix en, meaning with, and then courage, with courage. And you know, this is something that all of us can be. It's something that all of us should be. In the big bad world that is out there, there is far too much discouragement. One of the easiest things in the world is to destroy, to tear down, and to be discouraging. Someone said there are two kinds of people in the world. There are basement people who are going to pull you down, and there are balcony people who are going to pull you up. And each one of us has to decide which we're going to be. In the church, we do not need discouragers. There is enough of that out there in the world. We are called to encourage. Now, the word exhort is encouragement with a push. Some of us need to be pushed. Some can have a vision as to what we can do, what we can be, what we can become better than we can. So when there is a calling that someone says, this is something that you can do, and we doubt and we question ourselves, we question our ability, we question our training, we question our talent, we're never going to know unless we try. And our life is broadened, our life is expanded. We're giving far more opportunity to enjoy life the more that we do. And there are those who need to push us into doing more, not less. The one who gives with liberality. We have some great givers in our congregation. You have been blessed in life. You realize it. You recognize it. Brother Wayne referred to the fact that all of us are richly blessed. And that giving of a dollar is no small gift if that's the best that you can do. Most of us have been blessed far beyond what at one time in life we perhaps ever imagined And the Lord is the one who's responsible for that. We have been blessed. And those who are blessed even more are those who recognize that even at a young age. And they give and they give and they give generously. And God keeps blessing them with even greater blessings. The one who leads with diligence. In other words, if we're in a position of leadership, we're not just referring to those who serve as elders, or those who serve as deacons, or those who have some public role. We're talking about any given assignment. If we're given that assignment, we're to be diligent. Why? Because we have little time. We have little time. And we never know when our time may be up or drawing to an end. And so we need to accomplish all the good that we can for as long as we can, to as many as we can, in as many ways as we can. So if you're a leader, don't be lazy. The Lord said, work during the day, for the night is coming when no one can work. John 9:4. Time is urgent. And then last, I love this one. It's my favorite one, because I admire so much those who fill this role all the time in the life of the church. He says there are some who have the capacity, the ability, it appears, to express mercy or to be more merciful than others. I don't know if that comes as a result of personality trait or a certain set of disposition traits. I don't know. But sometimes you find this when you find a person who is called upon a lot for advice, for counsel, for wisdom. Problems are brought to them. And they have a way not only of helping, but they also have a way of being merciful, of being compassionate. Look at the Beatitudes again. And look at the emphasis that Jesus gives to those who are merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. If we want to receive mercy from God, we've got to be merciful to each other. So that is a forgiving spirit that is so characteristic of the Lord, but also characteristic of His people. I've always wondered as I read this verse, did Paul have someone in mind? And I think the one that he had in mind would be his brother Barnabas, who, when Paul had no use for the young man John Mark, Barnabas in effect said, Paul, I'm sorry you feel that way. But if you do, I'll take him with me and we'll get twice as much done. And so we have two missionary teams instead of one. About 25 years later, Paul is going to write Timothy in 2 Timothy 4 and says, Timothy, when you come, bring John Mark with you. He is of great profit to me. And this is the man who gives us the second account of the Lord's life and what we know is the gospel according to Mark. What if there had not been a Barnabas? We need people who believe in us. And like you, I would suppose I have been blessed most frequently from youth up in that regard by those in the Lord's church. Some have a gift for it. And Paul says, if you have that gift, use that gift to the glory of God and to the good of people, to the salvation of your souls, and you will find your fit, like in all of these other areas in the Lord's church. In the fall of 1921, the elders of the church at Charlotte Avenue, which is now the Charlotte Heights Congregation in West Nashville, decided that they wanted to have a citywide campaign in the spring of 1922. There were a lot of things to consider about a campaign like that, just like you have a ladies' day, or you have vacation Bible school, or you have senior day. Those things don't happen by accident. When you have a fellowship meal here, it's one of the largest undertakings that our leaders of those carry out, and we're so grateful for them. There were a lot of things to decide. What would be the best dates? What would be the best venue? Long before it became, or at least sometime before it became known as the Grand Ole Opry House, the Ryman Auditorium in downtown Nashville was secured for the meeting. The date would be late May, late March into early April. And then they went through a list of what we today would call restoration preachers. Who would be the best man to lead this, what would become a 10-day and 10-night evangelistic effort for Davidson County and the surrounding counties in Middle Tennessee? There was a very prominent preacher, very effective in Murfreesboro at the East Main congregation by the name of C.M. Pullius. He was a finalist. There was a younger man down in Henderson by the name of N.B. Hardeman, who during the course of his life would become known as the Prince of Preachers in his generation. They prayed about it. They invited Brother Hardeman to hold the meeting. It was a great decision. He would go on to hold 5 in all at the Ryman Auditorium in the coming years. But at that one, there were 150 baptisms, 150 additions to the Lord's Church, not counting restorations. And the Sunday following the campaign, there were 50 more baptisms in area congregations that the leaders of the campaign knew of. The problem was the elders knew that Brother Pullius knew that he was being considered for this opportunity, which really would affect history. They didn't know that at the time, but it affected history tremendously from that time forward. One of the elders said in their meeting about it, you know, Brother Pullius is also a great song leader. He's a great preacher, but he's a great song leader. Let's invite him to lead the singing. And so they dispatched a couple of elders from Nashville, the 30-mile trip down to Murfreesboro to the East Main Church to meet with him. And they said, Brother Pullius, we have decided prayerfully to invite Brother Hardeman to come and hold the meeting. We would be honored if you would come and lead the singing. I suppose they were a bit nervous about that because there is a rumor out there that some preachers at least have a problem with ego. And so they were concerned about that, how he would react. I don't believe you could be prepared for the response that that good man, great man, made. He said, Brethren, I will be happy to sweep the floors every night if that will help make this meeting a success. You know, it's interesting to me that of all the stories that have come from the Hardeman Tabernacle sermons in the Ryman Auditorium, this is a story that has survived as well. Someone who displays the kind of attitude, the kind of mind, the kind of spirit, I don't have to leave the scene. I don't have to hold the meeting. Give me a broom, and I will sweep that auditorium morning and night if needful to help make the meeting a success. Brother Hardeman became even more famous as a result of the success of that meeting and the ones to follow. But here we are today, October 4th, 2015, praising the humility and the mind of Christ displayed by a local preacher named C.M. Pullius. That kind of spirit is what we need when we're talking about the work of the church. I know that so many feel, you know, I'm fortunate if I can just get to services, and God bless you for that. That's true of several sitting in this auditorium. And that is so important that when you're not able to be here, we feel it. We hurt because of it. We miss Donna and Al Jean and their family today. They're a vital part of us. They're away from us. And there are others in the very same situation. You're conspicuous by your absence when you're not in your pew. But being a member of the Henderson Church family is far more than occupying a pew. It's finding your place, finding your fit. As Jane said yesterday, you are an essential piece to the Lord's church. And now we sing to encourage anyone who is ready to become a member of the church who has not yet made the decision to be obedient to the Lord in baptism by confessing your faith in Him, by repenting of your sins, by demonstrating that you believe in Him with all of your heart and you're ready to give Him your life. Some have suggested that when we make our confession of faith in Jesus, that we're doing the same thing that we're doing when we exchange wedding vows in a public wedding ceremony, also perhaps in this church building. As we commit our heart, as we commit our mind, as we commit our bodies and the soul that is within them to His care and keeping, we do so not taking advantage simply of His blood, but rather, again, as Paul introduced this passage, presenting our bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to Him, which is our reasonable service. Perhaps you have another need in coming back to the Lord or having requests of the Lord made for you on behalf of brethren. Whatever your need, we're going to sing to encourage you. Please determine now, if you haven't already, find your fit in Henderson and wherever the Lord leads you in the days and the years to come in service to Him through His church. While we stand and while we sing.